Hello, and welcome to Tantra Mar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Friday, October 8th. Coming up on today's show, Sackville Town Council will decide on Tuesday whether or not to go ahead with a recreation subsidy plan to help cover half the cost of youth programs in hockey, lacrosse, swimming, and skating. We'll bring you more details about the discussion around that policy. And from the mythical Midgic Airport to the Tantramar Community Pasture, Tori Weldon has told many a Sackville story throughout her 14-year career as a journalist for CBC Moncton. Weldon recently moved on from the CBC, and CHMA caught up with her to find out about her new gig and hear about some of her favorite moments from covering her hometown. That's coming up later in the show, but first, some more local news and information. Starting today, no visitors are allowed at the Sackville Memorial Hospital, with some exceptions. Horizon Health Network announced Thursday that due to the high number of people in hospital with COVID-19 in the province, enhanced visitor restrictions are in effect for all hospitals and healthcare facilities as of today. Horizon says some exceptions are in place for certain patients, including those eligible for a designated support person, such as patients in the following populations: end-of-life or palliative care, obstetrics, neonatal, intensive care or critical care units, pediatrics, patients who have been in hospital for 14 days or longer, and patients with intellectual or communication impairments. As well, Horizon says patients visiting an emergency department and outpatient clinic who require assistance may have one support person. Designated support people must not have COVID-19 symptoms and must take part in active screening before entering the hospital. They must also wear a mask, wash their hands, and only enter their loved one's room. For the first time in over a week, the province did not report another death from COVID-19, but we still have some sad news to share. A resident of the Drew Nursing Home passed away with the disease on Wednesday. That brings the total deaths at the Drew from this outbreak to 7. Testing of staff and residents at the Drew was conducted on Tuesday, but as of Thursday, Director Linda Shannon said she was still waiting to hear the results. The last round of testing at the Drew revealed 2 more cases of the disease and showed 18 active cases still in the home. The annual McLean's University Rankings Report is out again, and Mount Allison has placed 2nd in its category, primarily undergraduate universities in Canada. The school got knocked out of first place by the University of Northern British Columbia, based in Prince George, BC. Mount Allison ranked 1st in scholarships and bursaries, 2nd in student awards, and 3rd in student-to-faculty ratio. The Sackville School has come in first 22 times over the 3 decades McLean's has been publishing the rankings, and the school has always placed in the top 4. We reported Wednesday about an increase in property assessments this year throughout Sackville and the rest of the province. On Thursday, the province released numbers showing the total property assessment values for municipalities across the province. In Sackville, the total amount of assessments has gone up by 6.42% from last year. That's an average increase across all properties in the municipality, so some properties would have much higher increases and some lower. Sackville was roughly middle of the pack in terms of increases. The highest average increase was in Shediac, with property values going up an average of 12.75%. In Memramcook, values went up 9.62%, in Port Elgin, 10.95%, and in Dorchester, 3.66%. The Mount Allison Mounties have a busy Friday night ahead. The Mounties men's football team will play tonight against the St. FX University X-Men at 7 p.m. at Alumni Field. The game is ticketed, and proof of vaccination is required to attend. Over at the Tantramar Veterans Memorial Civic Center, the Mountie women's hockey team will take on St. FX University X-Women. That game also starts at 7 p.m. There is no admission, and spectators should enter at the lower entrance of the Civic Center. Anyone in attendance must show proof of vaccination and wear a mask while inside. And lastly today, before we get to our top stories, Sappy Fest is looking for a creative director. Festival organizers recently posted a call for applications looking for someone to take the imaginative lead for both a 3-day festival in July 2022 and for a presentation or a series of presentations over the coming winter. The call makes note that throughout the pandemic, SappiFest has managed to find alternative ways to present works, including the popular Cube projections in 2020 and a 26-hour live stream broadcast this past summer. More information is available at sappifest.com, and applications will be reviewed starting October 25th. The town of Sackville is considering a $65,000 subsidy program to help local families cover fees for certain recreation programs. The idea was born last fall when Sackville Minor Hockey and the Sackville Skating Club both made presentations to council asking for a further subsidy to their programs. Both pay substantial rink fees in order to operate in the Tantramar Memorial Civic Center, and that expense gets carried along to families registering their kids for hockey and skating. Town staff did not propose to lower the fees for the Civic Center in 2021, but instead gave council the option of spending some or all of a $65,000 council initiatives fund on helping with rink fees. This summer, staff came back to council with two options. The first would eliminate Civic Center fees for youth programs, which would put them in line with Amherst, and also their own policy for field and gymnasium rentals, which are free for youth activities. That option would cost the town about $105,000. The second option involved creating a rebate program, where youth who live in Sackville and pay fees for recreation programs could get a percentage back, up to a certain amount. That option was estimated to cost about $65,000. Staff recommended in favor of the rebate plan, and council ultimately agreed. After a few months hammering out the details of how the program would work, a proposed policy was presented to council this past Monday and will be up for approval at the next regular meeting on Tuesday. The proposal is for a 2-year pilot policy, which would reimburse 50% of registration fees up to $300 for any not-for-profit minor sport organization in Sackville that is required to pay a facility fee to operate. The program would apply to kids aged 4 to 18. The proposed policy rules out private recreation programs like dance and martial arts, and also programs like soccer or baseball, which use fields or gymnasiums that are provided for free to youth programs. The organizations that would qualify include Sackville Minor Hockey, Tantramar Lacrosse, the Sackville Skating Club, and the Sackville Swim Club. Here's Recreation Director Matt Pride explaining the proposed policy on Monday.
The reason that we're recommending those four particular organizations is because all four of those organizations pay a substantial facility fee. They all take place in a facility, and they need to pay a large fee, which then increases, results in a large registration fee for those children that are participating. So other sports like soccer, basketball, baseball, football, we already subsidize those facility fees through our reciprocal agreement with the school district. So none of those programs pay a facility fee to offer their programs. So their registrations are generally quite a bit lower than the four that I've already named. Additionally, we have other sport groups in town like dance or martial arts that are privately owned. We felt that it made more sense to focus the subsidy on nonprofit organizations that are based in Sackville to help increase their numbers to make them more sustainable.
Residents would be asked to apply for the reimbursement, providing proof of residency, a child's Medicare card, and proof of purchase. The town also proposes to communicate with other sports subsidy programs to ensure that each resident is only reimbursed up to 50% of what they've paid out of pocket. Residents will not have to demonstrate financial need to qualify for the reimbursement. Councillor Sabine Dietz raised a concern over the policy on Monday, namely that the subsidy targets only specific sports.
This seems to me a bit discriminatory to just focus on those activities and not broaden it. And so I am a bit concerned about that. I really like the work that went into it. So it's well laid out, and the way you will take care of no double dipping happens is really great. But I'm wondering if there is something we can do about reconsidering just the scope to who it will actually apply instead of focusing only on those particular sports. And I mentioned in my email that when my kids were small, they were not participating in those sports, and we definitely had financial problems in getting them to participate in the recreational activities that they wanted to participate in.
Treasurer Michael Beal responded to say that staff had tightened the scope of the subsidy plan once they started to crunch the numbers. With over 700 kids living within town limits, Beal said the program could not promise up to $300 per child, as the expense would far exceed the $65,000 envelope available.
We really looked and said, okay, well, let's concentrate it on the ones that pay the large facility rental fees to help offset the larger payments for the registration fees. And then over the next few years, while it's developing and if it's working, we can slowly try to expand that to other ones as well and potentially look at increasing the budget year over year, because it is a lot easier to increase the budget an amount each year than to look at a $200,000 expense in 1 year.
Dietz suggested that other remedies might be available, such as lowering the qualifying age to 16 or reducing the maximum amount of the subsidy. Councillor Bruce Finney chimed in with another criticism, that the program, as proposed, might end up subsidizing those that don't need it.
It appears to me is that those people who, with those sports that we're talking about, and the higher costing ones, they have their children in those sports because they could afford to put them in there in the first place. To give them, reimburse them a certain amount of money is like giving those that can afford money back for just putting their kids in. When I'm looking at the number of kids that actually can't afford, or families can't afford at all, and that's where I'd like to see the money go to. We seem to be providing for those that have and not for those that don't have.
Councillor Alison Butcher responded to Finney's concern, saying that the point of the program was to lower the fees so that more families would be able to consider the more expensive sports. Butcher said she felt the program would help level the playing field between sports so that children would have more options.
If you make $40,000 a year and your child wants to play soccer, great. But if you make $40,000 a year and your child wants to play hockey, all of a sudden this means that your child gets to choose, rather than saying, sorry, you can't play hockey because we can't afford that, so maybe you'll need to play something else instead. This is leveling the playing field for families so that all of the sporting options are available for their children.
Council will debate and decide on the proposed recreation subsidy at their meeting on Tuesday, October 12th. And last but not least today, Tori Weldon became a CBC reporting fixture over her 14 years with the Moncton office of the National Broadcaster. At the end of July, Weldon moved on from the CBC and is now producing podcasts, still based in Sackville. I spoke with her earlier this week and asked her to share some of her favorite memories of covering Sackville and southeast New Brunswick.
So, congrats on your new job,
first of all.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
How long were you a reporter in Sackville for the CBC?
I think the first time I worked for the CBC was probably 2008. So there was a couple of breaks in there. The first story I ever did, because I've thought about this a few times, there was a massive whale that washed up and died out at Rockport, like way out Rockport way. So a few friends of mine told me about that. And I had just sort of started talking to people at the CBC, and I thought, there's a news story. So I called, they said, do it. So I did a quick sort of 1 minute news story about it. I think that was the first one I ever did. Like my first news piece got to be sort of very, very local.
Yeah.
It was a fun one. Yeah.
And you're from Sackville, right?
Yeah, I'm from Pointe Butte. Okay. But I moved away when I was 12. So I'm not as ingrained as a lot of people are, because I didn't go to school here in Sackville at all.
Okay.
Port Elgin until I was 12, and then I moved away. So, but I'm from here. Yeah.
So what's it like? You know, I mean, I guess it's your hometown, but not your hometown in some aspects. So what was it like being a reporter here for all these years with, you know, being your family home?
Well, it's funny because when you asked me to sort of talk about it, I started sort of thinking, like, what was it like? I think in the early years, it was more, I lived in Sackville and I worked in Moncton. So there wasn't a lot of crossover between the two. It was a real divide, which I think was really good because I found it it was a really intensive job, especially in the early years. It was a real learning curve for me because I had gone from working at CHMA, and then I did 1 year at journalism school at Concordia, and then I started at the CBC. And so I worked part-time. So it was just when they'd call me, I'd come in, and you had to come in with a story. So just, it was, if I worked all week, I had to have five stories that week of ideas. And so it was just a really intense, it was all encompassing. But I didn't tend to do a lot of Sackville stories, and I think it was just there was a certain divide there. But over the years, I started to do more Sackville stuff, just because I live here, so that's where I'd hear about things. And then there'd be the odd day where it'd be like a snowstorm, and I'd get stuck in town. But there's a pressure to deliver all the time, just because it's the news. I mean, not that somebody was standing over me breathing down my neck, but it's like, if you're going to work that day, you might as well come up with something. So there was a snowstorm, and it was Valentine's Day, so I thought, like, what am I going to do? So I went down to Bloom's and just did a story about what it was like trying to have a Valentine's Day at a flower shop, busiest day of the year when there's a massive snowstorm going on. So I think that kind of opened my mind more to, like, okay, if I do stories in Sackville, I don't have to drive to Moncton. Yeah. And then I just sort of started to see this wealth of information, just super local Sackville stories. So it's been good, but it was nice to sort of fly below the radar almost for a long time. Like, Moncton was work, Sackville was home, and the two didn't meet. But over time, they started to blur a bit more, and I started to kind of do more Sackville stuff, like... There was a story I did about the Midgic Airport. And
this is something I'm going to have to look this story up. This has been a question mark for me.
It's not groundbreaking journalism. It wasn't like I solved the most benign mystery anybody could ever possibly imagine. But it was just my parents had this Sackville. They had a hat and it said the Midgic Airport. So I always thought, like, where did these hats come from? Because everybody thought it was a great joke. You'd see them every once in a while, especially on, like, older folks. So one day I just thought, I didn't have a lot to do that day. I think I had an afternoon, so I just started. And I was working with my cameraman, not my cameraman, a camera person at CBC, Pierre Fournier, who was fantastic. So we just started sort of following people around. Like, I saw John Murchie driving down the street. I thought, he might have a story about this hat. I followed him. He wouldn't talk to me, but we ended up at a friend's house of his, so then I talked to them, and then... We ended up out in Midgic, found a guy who knew a guy with a hat, and then he made a big joke about it came from somebody else, and then I called that guy's daughter, because anyway, if you watch it, I won't give it all away now, but if you watch it, it was just sort of the most hyper-local story. You know, it's like, you couldn't do that story unless you lived here, because nobody else in the world has ever heard of this, but I think because it was so local, it sort of, the people who knew about it, I think they appreciated the fact that it was just a very local story.
I gotta say, some of my favorite stories on CBC are those hyperlocal ones, even if they're from, they could be from BC or Newfoundland. Like, they don't have to be from my neck of the woods. They're kind of amazing the way they focus in on just one spot.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's why, you know, when the Tribune closed, no, granted, they weren't necessarily, and it wasn't well staffed. The people who worked there did a fantastic job, but they weren't necessarily going out and finding a lot of stuff. It was more just what people were sending in. But as you know, there's a huge value in that. Mm-hmm. But it's been nice to see CHMA pick that up, and you guys just sort of come in and the Warp yeah. Times, just kind of focusing on this local stuff, because now it's so hard to have that centralized information about what's actually going on in your community. Because you can rely on Facebook only so far, right, for the truth. And who knows, you only see what you see. You don't even know what you miss, so... Anyway, local news, yeah, it's extra important right now, but you really do need people who live in the community, I think, to have a good sense of what it is.
Once you started to do some Sackville stories, and I noticed myself on Facebook how excited people would get when they would see a CBC story that was based here, you know? Like, oh, this has been noticed. Did you start to get a lot more calls and... requests from people in town, like passing you stories, asking you to cover this, that, and the other thing?
More so, yeah. It wasn't a huge cascade of things, but I did start, especially on Facebook. People would find me on Facebook and send me little tips, and I definitely got stories out of that. Or sometimes they would just want to know something, and sometimes I could help them, and other times it was like, I don't know either. But yeah, I did become a bit more of a conduit, I think, for people who I didn't know. For those kind of stories, which was great, because that's how you find more stuff, is people start to reach out. But it wasn't a huge cascade. Like, I worried sometimes, or not worried, but I wondered if it would start to be a big deal, but it wasn't. It wasn't like I was a doctor and people are coming up and asking me for diagnosis at the market or anything. It wasn't, you know, it didn't get overwhelming. Yeah.
That's good. You mentioned it was an intense job, and I believe you 100% when you say that. now you've made a change. Yes. So, I mean, Sackville mourns the loss of your byline on the CBC, but tell us a bit about this new adventure you're taking on.
I work for a company called Pacific Content, and it's a company that makes branded podcasts. And I'm a producer, and absolutely working from home. And I think I was kind of lucky with the pandemic that people were working from home at the company, but it's based in Vancouver. And then they would have some people who worked in Toronto as well. But I think during the pandemic, they just thought, let's open it up. It's remote now. You can be anywhere in the country. So that's, otherwise, I don't know that I would have been eligible for the job. But I had a few people, when I was starting to look around, I had a few people sort of say, podcasting, that's where you should go next. And it's like, well, of course, I know how to do that stuff. I know how to work in audio. I know how to write some things. So it just seemed like a natural fit. And I applied and got lucky and got it. So now I'm working exclusively from home, which is it's still a big shift that I'm working, just like sitting in the same room all day. It's been something, but yeah, so it's been a whole different thing, but it's a really interesting job so far. Like last week, I got to call the guy who invented the digital camera while he was working at Kodak. So I called him up, and it was just about this sort of technology that he developed and didn't get picked up for another 20 years. And it's like anything, you call somebody for a particular reason, but then you get talking to them and you're like, oh, there's a whole lot here I didn't know. And it's just, you start to learn all these things. So just in the last little bit of the job, I've really started to kind of get back into that, like just kind of getting to talk to people. And everybody's got, you know, whether or not you invented the digital camera, everybody's got some pretty interesting things to say. It's been a really fun shift to do something else. I've had to really sort of turn the dial down on the intensity because I'm used to the CBC was a great job and I learned so much and it was so fantastic. But it did start to feel like a lot at points, just trying to go at 100%.
Mm-hmm. You're on a news cycle and you have to produce and produce and produce. Whereas now it's a bit more of a slow process. You can take your time.
Absolutely. Which has been just such a huge shift that I had to sort of just changed my way of thinking. It's like, no, I don't need to finish this by the end of the day. This is coming out in November. You know, like I can take a breath and just sort of spend some time with some things, which has been great. It's been really nice to be able to do it. Yeah.
All right. Any other Sackville reporting moments that you want to share with us?
Oh, geez, there's been so many. I loved doing the agricultural stories, going out to Dixon's farm one day. Early days in the pandemic, just talking about all of a sudden people are like, we want local food, and sort of the huge amount that they were selling all of a sudden because the pandemic hit and people were worried about supply lines and all these sorts of things. And again, that was the camera person I was working with, Pierre, did such a fantastic job, and Shelley Dixon was just so great. And so that one was fantastic. And then after I talked to Shelley, I think she was on a couple of national news programs. Like, it really sort of took off. And that's always sort of, like, I know it's just sort of taking these small stories, which are super important to people. And so it's nice to see that get picked up elsewhere, because it's happening everywhere in the country. But it's nice to see those examples getting pulled from small places that you don't normally hear about in the news. And just the Tantramar Community Pasture. Like, I grew up in Pointe Butte looking at that field. And I would drive by it on the High Marsh Road and see the sign that said Tantramar Community Pasture, but I didn't know what it was. So just before I finished, I got to call them up and talk to them about what they were doing and why they were doing it. And it was so vastly interesting. I had no idea about it. And just talking to two people, the guy who runs it and then a woman who works for, you know, sort of an agricultural group, talking about why this field, that's just a big, big piece of land, but why it's so important. It's like, I didn't know that, but I will miss being able to look into those things, but somehow I still hope down the road to be able to maybe just do some side projects or things like that for CHMA, but just, there's so many interesting things that it's so easy to just sort of take for granted, like the Tantramar Community Pasture. So that one was a good one. Oh, and I'm sure if I sat and thought about it long enough,
they would just keep coming.
Yeah. There's so many interesting people in this community doing some pretty, pretty interesting things. So yeah, there's been a lot of them.
That was former CBC reporter Tori Weldon, who told many a story from Sackville over the course of her 14 years with CBC Moncton. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Friday, October 1st. As always, we hope that you will get in touch with your comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.